So during our most recent Starting Point class, we had some really interesting discussions about traditional religious words. And one member told us that they had bristled at our use of the word religious in describing our children's program. Another, a Jewish person, recoiled at the many times the word church came up in describing our community. And they felt that they could never be a part of a community calling themselves a church. So we began to become more conscious of our word usage and also began a longer discussion about religious words that trigger us and how we might broaden our thinking about them. And I also promised them a service on this topic. So here it is. So let me start with a confession. Yeah. I used to feel very uncomfortable every time I heard someone use the word God. Not because I didn't believe in something greater, but because I didn't know what that word meant to me anymore. I didn't believe in an old man sitting in a cloud in the sky, like our children were talking about, the kind so beautifully depicted by Michelangelo on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. And I didn't believe in the God of the fundamentalist indoctrination or dogma, let alone the vengeful God of too much suffering in the Hebrew Bible. And I no longer believed in the God of my Baptist church teenage years, where I was told what I should believe and was damned if I didn't. Can we sort out the echo? That definition of God made me feel really uncomfortable. And yet I also found myself drawn to something that language alone could never quite express. A yearning, a quiet knowing, a moment of beauty or connection, an energy that felt, well, sacred. Perhaps some of you have felt that too. So many of us in this congregation come with wounded histories or allergic reactions to religion and a language of reverence. Some of us are atheists, agnostics, skeptics, or humanists. Others of us have very specific theist beliefs with our own vocabulary. And some of us have earth-centered philosophies. We don't come here to be told what to believe. Rather, we come here to explore together what matters most in life. Many of us are spiritual seekers of some kind, lovers of beauty and meaning, people who care deeply about justice, compassion, and truth. And that is both the tension and the gift of Unitarian Universalism. We are a tradition where humanists and mystics, skeptics, and believers gather not to argue doctrine, but to share this precious journey of life. So what do we do with those old words we've been talking about for the last hour? Words like God, religion, holy, sin, prayer, church, and blessing. Do we ban them from our vocabulary? They are part of our Judeo-Christian heritage, but for many of us, these words feel heavy with misuse or even meaningless. But do we just discard them entirely? Do we throw the baby out with the bathwater? Or can we gently, thoughtfully explore them again? Can we make space for personal interpretation and meaning, for metaphor and mystery? That is what I'd like to invite us into today, a shared exploration of this language of reverence. So let's begin with the elephant in the room. Let's begin with the big one, God. For many of us, that word is loaded. It might conjure up an image of a judging old man with a long white beard, a little bit like Matthew over there. Or a strict father figure that we never asked for. yet for others, God may evoke love or comfort or a higher power, or how about the divine feminine or nature or simply awe. In our tradition, belief in God is not required and disbelief is not shamed. But what if instead of arguing about whether God exists, which none of us, frankly, really know the answer to, we asked what that word might point to? I always remember hearing one congregant ask another, an atheist, "Well, who is this God that you don't believe in?" Right, Matthew? I'm picking on you today. For some, God means love. For others, it means the interconnected web of life. For some, it is the mystery that defies words, the more, the spirit of life or higher power. Something greater than ourselves, an energy, perhaps, that may not be a being at all. And for others, it's the wonder of existence, or the rhythms of nature. So can we pay attention to something beyond what our minds can grasp or make sense of? And if so, what do we want to call that? It may be beyond words. Similarly, words like holy and sacred, as Jill talked about earlier, they don't require supernatural belief. Like she shared earlier, they invite us to notice what is worthy of reverence, what is precious in life, a child's laugh, a child squeezing the ducky earlier, the quiet of a redwood forest, or the majesty of a mountain, a silent moment to honor someone's life, or the birth of a child, the experience of falling in love, or the connection a community feels when gathering together in protest. To call something sacred or holy is not to define it with certainty. Rather, it's to approach it with awe and wonder and say, "This matters. This matters to me." And as we mentioned earlier, we may wrestle with words like church and religion, especially those of us who were hurt in other religious settings or who come from traditions with synagogues, mosques, temples, and other religious homes. But consider this. Church doesn't have to mean a place for Christian dogma. In our tradition, it means community, the place where we show up for each other, where we ask big questions and honor the mystery of life, where we light candles and we sing songs and we hold silence and we try to live with love and integrity. Church can be both a building and a community. But if it makes us feel uncomfortable, we can also translate it in our minds to fellowship or community or gathering. And what about religion? Its root comes from the Latin word religare, which actually means to bind back together. And it can be the framework that holds us in shared meaning, in shared commitment, in communal values and care. Religion doesn't imply a set of beliefs, but could instead be a way of coming together around a shared mission of compassion and justice, as you see on our wall. And many of you have asked me what the word worship means when I say, "Come, let us worship," when we're not worshiping a specific God. Now, to me, worship translates to what is worthy of lifting up. I'm talking about focusing our attention on what matters, on lifting up different aspects of life. When we worship together, we spend time in community honoring what's important to us. Matters of love, justice, equity, fairness, compassion, and spirit. So now let's talk about prayer. For many you use, especially from non-theistic backgrounds, prayer can sound like we're talking to a God we may not believe in, right? But what if prayer is simply a practice of paying attention, of setting an intention or expressing gratitude, of naming what we long for, even if we whisper it into the great silence? The poet Mary Oliver said, "I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention." And maybe that's the point. Prayer doesn't have to be a conversation with a divine being. It can be a way of grounding ourselves by paying attention to what is important to us. It can be a way of focusing on what we want to create in our lives. Or it can simply be a place to hold silence, or to listen to poetry, or a time for meditation with deeper breathing. So let's move to two other words that often make UUs feel uncomfortable. Are you ready? How about sin and evil? Now, we don't use sin a lot in Unitarian Universalism, but it's a word that we need to be able to translate when our more traditional friends or family use it, right? In traditional theology, sin means disobedience to God. But in its original Greek, the word hamartia simply, I don't know if I pronounced that right, but simply meant missing the mark. Like an archer whose arrow falls short. Isn't that a deeply human experience? I mean, don't we all miss the mark sometimes?
Oh, yeah.
I won't pick on you this time. We hurt each other. We betray our values. We go out of alignment with what we know is right. We fall short of our covenant. Yet perhaps sin isn't about shame, but rather about recognizing where we've gone astray, where we've been imperfect, and what we can actually choose to do to return or repair something. And evil is similar. There is seemingly so much evil in the world these days, isn't there? But it's not some external force people are possessed by, but rather the harm that we cause when we act from fear, from greed, or from indifference. Or perhaps when we lack awareness or wisdom. It's when we fall short of the kind, loving beings we are born to be. And from a Unitarian Universalist lens, evil is not inevitable or eternal. It's something that we are called to confront, to transform, and to heal through growing consciousness, both within ourselves and in the world around us. And what about the word blessing? I've used it a couple times in the service so far. And as many of you know, I have a whole sermon about that word I preached a few years ago. So who blesses us? Well, I believe we can bless one another by caring and offering kindness to one another. We don't need to leave blessing to some higher authority. We collectively bless our children in our child dedication ceremony. We bless one another when we sing during our joys and sorrows, like we did just now, lifting each other up. And we bless the world when we choose to come from love in what we do. And finally, there's the word faith. Many of you ask me what it means to have faith when you don't necessarily believe in a God. It's a really good question. And what does it mean when we say that Unitarian Universalism is a faith tradition? Well, for me, a UU interpretation of faith is all about trust. Trust in the unfolding of life. Trust in human potential. Trust in the interdependent web of life. Trust in the power of love and community. Faith is what keeps us going when we don't have certainty. And it's the courage to keep showing up, to keep loving, to keep acting for justice, even when the outcome is unclear. And faith, my friends, isn't about having all the answers. It's about being willing to live the questions together. So what does it mean to reclaim this language of reverence? It certainly doesn't mean returning to old creeds, and it doesn't mean pretending all words work for all people or imposing our meaning. It means being honest, creative, and curious. It means allowing space for poetry and metaphor, for multiple meanings and diverse experiences. As Sam shared earlier, this is part of our Unitarian Universalist value of pluralism. We allow for multiple meanings, multiple understandings and beliefs. So let's not let harmful pasts rob us of the deep, powerful human work that these words can point to. And let's not let one opinion or belief discount so many others. As the poet Rainer Maria Rilke wrote, which was spoken at my ordination 10 years ago, be patient towards all that is unsolved in your heart and try to love the questions themselves. Amen. Our tradition is, I'm coming to that word, our tradition is not about certainty. It's about curiosity, learning and listening, listening deeply and reverently to each other, to life, to that small voice within. And it's about being curious and learning new ways, curious to learn another's perspective, curious about how to release our triggers, and curious about how to understand each other better. We may never all agree on these words, but we can wonder about what they try to express. So I invite you, my friends, I challenge you to take one word that once put you off, whether it's God or prayer or church or sin, whatever it might be, and gently hold it up in the light and ask yourself, not what it used to mean to you, but what it might mean to you now. What could it mean if you came at it from an attitude of openness and curiosity? Reclaiming doesn't mean agreement. It means choosing what's meaningful to you, and it means letting language serve life rather than the other way around. And maybe, just maybe, in reclaiming the language of reverence, we also reclaim a deeper part of ourselves. A part that may be sacred, holy, or just deeply human. And if you're someone who's hesitant to say amen to that, as many of us may be, know that you don't have to mean it as a submission or certainty. Amen can simply mean yes. May it be so. I affirm this. I hope for this. Or I commit to this. Perhaps it's not the end of the conversation, but the beginning of our journey to live it. So let us say it together in whatever spirit is true for each of us. Amen.